Welcome back. And it's episode 33 of the Guardian Project Podcast. I'm your host, Andy. And you ever have a time when you find out what's in someone's hand accidentally and you really want to share it, but you go, it rhymes with, so that you don't tell the whole table?
Sure, yeah.
Well, the card was Pendekar's Perpurgis.
Oh, I don't know that card.
You don't know what rhymes with that?
I don't know.
Zendikar's Resurgence.
Oh, okay, that one rhymes, yeah. And I'm your co-host, Mike Coyle. And, you know, people have been wondering about some of the other gods in the Theros story, you know, about what they're doing, specifically Krufix. But if you've ever played with a Krufix player, you'd know exactly what they're doing. They're really not doing anything, but they have like 100 floating colorless mana. You just leave them alone, okay?
Please listen carefully.
And this is the podcast where we talk about all things Magic the Gathering.
And especially Commander. And before we start, we wanted to share some really good news. We recently became an affiliate with TCG Player.
We did!
So if you can't find what you're looking for at your LGS, and we do press, support your LGSs. We would appreciate if you used our affiliate link when buying your Magic singles and sealed products. It's an easy way to support the podcast. It allows us to do some fun things. We did Pack One, Pick One last week. We plan on doing it again this week. Maybe we can keep doing that. Some giveaways. So please support us any way you can. And that's the first way.
It sure is. What do we have on the agenda of this week?
This week we're going to talk about the Mark Rosewater mailbag article that he released, talking about some of the Theros Beyond Death questions that people submitted to him. We're going to talk about the Wizards Play Network Commander Nights that they announced, which I think will be cool. We have a new segment called, and for that, I'm sorry.
Also, it could be called, and for that reason, I no longer play this card.
Yeah, we're going to talk about some of the mean things we've done in the past, and we've learned from that.
Learned. And we actually do not do these things anymore. And you may do them just to do it once. And then you realize how awful of a person you may have been.
Then you get to build a new deck. And we're going to do a pack one, pick one with another one of our packs from our fan Cube Draft.
Ravnica Allegiance this week. Ooh. Thank you.
And we're going to finish off with Commander of the Week. And I will present my Izzet deck. Jorian Rune Diver.
So we're going to talk about some Theros Beyond Death mailbag questions that came into Mark Rosewater.
Yes.
And we thought some of these were interesting. So we just want to talk about a few of them. One of them, there was a question that they asked when trying to condense a whole block into one set, how do you decide which mechanics to bring back and which ones to not bring back? And so he said in any return, he wanted to make sure that the set felt like you were going back to the world, which means mechanically you want to have some connection to what happened there last time. he said what happens early in vision design is that they do a write-up for every mechanic and theme that showed up in the previous visits. And so Theros last time was a three-set block. So you had Theros, Born of the Gods, and Journey into Nyx.
Right.
And we had, 15 gods?
Yeah.
We had a bunch of mechanics.
A lot.
Some didn't return because they weren't like the highlighted, obviously, mechanic.
Sure. Like heroic.
Well, it kind of came back, right?
Kind
but
of,
like inspired.
Okay. Yeah.
Inspired. The untapping to do something did not come back. I don't think it came back on any card. When this card untaps or when X untaps, do something.
I don't remember seeing that on any card.
If it did, tell us.
Yeah.
Because I think I missed that one. But so they said the three things they decided that were most important to come back to Theros were gods, devotion, and the enchantment matter theme. So I would agree.
Yeah.
Those are the three things that I think of when I think of Theros.
Yeah, I mean, devotion for sure.
Devotion is probably one of my favorite mechanics. Yeah. It's really fun.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And you don't have to work that hard to make it work either. And it fits in every commander deck for the most part. If you're playing permanents, it's not that hard to turn on.
I usually see it in only monocolor, but I know I've seen you play it in your two color decks and stuff and switch back and forth between is my Shrine to Nyx going to tap for white or black?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's it works.
Nick, though, Shrine to Nyx, very good. I think one of the most common creatures is obviously Grey Merchant of Asphodel. A lot of people play that, and that doesn't matter what deck he's being played in, because even if your devotion's only three, you're usually good to go, because everybody else losing three and you gaining that much life, it works out pretty well. You good?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It was the most thoughtful adjusting of a mic without trying to make noise ever.
I'm sorry. I'm usually pretty quiet, and I wanna eat this microphone today.
So he said they didn't walk into it believing the Enchantments Matter keyword had to be Constellation, but after trying a lot of other things, they came to the conclusion that they got it right the first time with Constellation.
Gotcha.
And a lot of people the first time around was like, why didn't we have Constellation in Theros? Because we only had it in Journey into Nyx.
Oh, gotcha, yeah.
And I think it would have seen a lot of play had they done it more than just the few cards they had done it the first time, so mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. they did it the second time. And this time they didn't do it on only enchantment permanents. There are Constellation on non-enchantments as well.
Okay.
So I liked it triggering itself, though, the first time it came in.
Oh.
Because the Constellation, fair. The old ones would say when it or another.
Right.
Now it just says obviously enchantment. So they said this was the hardest, one of the hardest things to do when designing a return is knowing what needs to be there versus what you simply want there. So.
That's fair.
Yeah. another question, was there ever a period where Elspeth was going to stay dead, or was her return planned the moment Heliod betrayed her forever ago?
Yeah, I like this one.
Yeah, so he said her escape was built into the design to kill her in the original Theros block, but because they're trying to tell a very Greek mythology style story, they knew that Heliod had to kill her, but the existence of an underworld allowed us to use the ability, or allowed them the ability to do that without permanently losing her.
Yeah, and how convenient for her to come back as soon as another mono-white planeswalker may have died.
And that's fine.
It would be kind of cool.
What?
If Elspeth joined up with the Gatewatch.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Right.
In the future.
Right.
For more Gatewatchy stuff. I like the Gatewatch story arc. A lot of people were over it, but then they did dial it back after they were in... Well, we had Oath of the Gatewatch, mm-hmm. and then they just, it was like overdone.
Yeah.
In a lot of people's eyes. I never really disliked it, but I can see why. Because it did feel like Magic's Avengers for a while.
Yeah, I was going to say Power Rangers, but yeah, no, it does feel like that. And then in Dominaria, it's like, oh, we're going to bring in the Green Ranger. We're going to bring in the Silver Ranger on Dominaria with the weather.
Who plays the Piccolo and then the Godzilla arrives?
That's Karn.
Karn plays the Piccolo and the weather light arrives.
Karn turns his hand into a Piccolo.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, they said that allowing her to be lost for a little bit just took her out of the story for a bit, but that there was never a time when they thought that she would stay dead. They said you might note in the Theros novella that they went to great lengths to explain how the underworld worked. It had Elspeth die specifically on Theros, unlike Xenagos, who died on Nyx and is actually gone forever.
Okay.
So that was cool. One of the other questions I really liked was, how was the decision made to determine which gods returned? Because we only saw seven.
Right.
Right. Six in the set and then one in as the Biobox.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he said, as they explained above, we knew they couldn't return to Theros without having gods, but they also knew that 15 gods was way too many for one set.
Makes sense.
And there was a lot of discussion during Journey into Nyx design at the end of the block that they'd bitten off more than they could handle, and that if they had to redo the whole block again, mm-hmm. they wouldn't do 15 gods.
That's fair.
They said if we have trouble fitting them in three sets, they're for sure going to have issues fitting them into one. And the question was, how many could they actually fit? So they said from the story perspective, which is interesting, because we didn't get a story this time around. We only got a short novella and some
little
excerpts, little tidbits.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They said they needed Heliod and Erebos, and they knew they'd have to reference Aethryos because it was the god of the passage and like the underworld.
Right, right.
So they ended up deciding just to do the cycle of monocolored gods. The monocolored cards were easier to get into more decks, and the monocolored ones were the biggest gods from a cosmetology. Oh my god, can you imagine like the gods just like doing your hair, doing your nails?
They're just looking like, gorgeous walk into, all like, the time.
Thassa's beauty salon.
Oh my god,
a little Thassa's boutique.
Where there's just like a little port, or not a little port, a little stain on the wall of where something used to be, like a Biden.
Like a Biden maybe? That was stolen.
It was just gone.
She was bested by Kiora.
She got her nails did and then took that Biden.
Yeah, right. She got her that's when it happened. She got her nails did
mm-hmm.
and then she took it and left.
Yep.
they said then they decided to make Aethryos the Biobox card as a way to get him into the set without it being in the booster packs.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said Clovis came about because of the previous story and making such a big deal about the missing red green god. They replaced it.
True.
When he ascended to godhood, and the players had focused on it a lot, and we realized it would be the opportunity to make a desired card. They said the idea of having Clovis trapped in the underworld thematically fit the set and explain the absence of the red green god in the previous set.
Yep.
And that was seven gods, and they said that was enough.
I think it's enough.
I don't disagree.
Yeah, the set feels balanced the way it is.
Let's see. One more question. They said, why are six of the 15 mythic rare cards green after Eldraine?
Because they didn't know Eldraine was going to be a problem until Eldraine.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a pretty good answer almost all the time.
Yeah.
Right. So you have to remember we work far ahead.
Yeah.
They said we committed to what was in Theros Beyond Death before Throne of Eldraine was released. That means there's nothing we can do to change Theros Beyond Death.
I just want to say that I didn't actually read that question and answer, and that was my answer to that question.
You could do PR for Wizards.
Specifically for Mark Rosewater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of the other questions just seemed very, why is white not good and why is green overpowered? And I don't think those really pertain to the set. I think that's more of an overall issue that they're working on.
Yeah. well, hopefully they're working on it.
But they did say, we'll do one more. When and where are we going to see the rest of the Titans or the Elder Giants?
Yeah.
And he said, let me start by addressing a couple of things that are presumed in this question. He says, yes, there are more than two Titans trapped in the underworld. No, they have not decided how many.
Right.
They said the Titans were added in vision design and they were trying to tap into Greek mythology and that they hadn't and what they hadn't hit in the original block.
Yeah.
And they said due to the popularity of the Titan cycle in Magic 11, that's like Frost Titan and Sun Titan.
Yep.
All of those cards.
Mm-hmm.
They said Titans had some equity in the game and they thought it would be fun to make Theros versions of Titans. They said they were first designed as a cycle of monocolored creatures because they didn't play a major role in the story. And there were so many other things to get into the set. They were dropped from a full cycle to just two cards.
Yeah.
And that they were made into two colored to separate them from the Magic 11 Titans. And the colors selected were based mostly on what cool designs they had, with one caveat that they didn't want the two overlapping in color at all.
Okay. That's fair.
They said it was not the intent to make them a cycle, but their multicolorness combined with the acknowledgement that there are more does push in that direction as Magic does so to make people like cycles of cards.
Yeah.
So they said whether we make more has a lot to do with the reception of the two in the set. If the players like them and request we make more, he says, I bet we find places to put them.
I think they were really cool. And I think if you didn't have like mythics other than Elspeth with the escape mechanic, it probably wouldn't look that great. So it was important that they made some good mythics with the escape mechanic
to also escape.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. I don't disagree. So I think they're cool. I think, we saw if you watch the, game nights, the most recent game nights, yeah. Uro was played.
Ooh.
It did a lot of work.
A lot of work.
I think I'd like to see Croaks do just as much work, but it's hard when you're not actually getting card advantage. You're just taking cards away from your opponent. So it plays a lot differently.
It does.
And it's in red black, which I think is inherently harder to play mm-hmm. a deck like Uro to the same power level, I guess, of a green blue deck.
But you were just telling me before this that last time you played Rakdos, you did your World Gorger Dragon combo.
I did do that.
You just win with Croaks with that. You just keep casting him over and over and over again with all of your mana.
You have to have the cards to escape.
No, you just keep casting them from your command zone.
Oh, as your commander.
Yeah,
commander. Yes, yes.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, you're right. You can't. Well, when it dies, you can just put in the command zone. Yeah, yeah. I guess. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, that's silly. I guess it's the exact same deck then.
Yeah.
Because your opponents, they discard a card,
mm-hmm.
lose three life,
mm-hmm.
and what else?
They discard a card if they discard, or if it's a non-land. Wait, do they take damage if they don't discard a card?
I don't know. That's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You have to...
Where's Judge Anthony when you need him?
Yeah, or Google.
I mean, Google works too.
Let's look it up.
Croaksa. Titan of Death's Hunger. He's got lots of mouths. And they do lots of things. Mostly eat, though. What do you think Croxa eats? Like, what's his favorite fast food restaurant?
McDonald's, clearly.
Just McDonald's?
It's the best. So, Croxa has, when it enters the battlefield or attacks, each opponent discards a card. Each opponent who didn't discard a non-land card loses 3 life. So, it does work. Because you only have to cast it. If you have infinite mana, you just cast it 7 times. They discard 7 if they have 7. And then they just start taking 3 life.
Gotcha. Yep. It's good. It's good.
It does. It
does good things.
It does the thing. So, I, for one, am happy we went back to Theros. And I always think that these questions that Mark Rosewater answers are interesting because you get a little bit of a perspective into their design and why they do the things that they did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see how all this stuff is going to play out with Ikoria, Lair of Behemoths.
More big stuff.
They actually, I don't know if you saw one of the unset cards.
Which one? The Clamilton?
No, not Alexander Clamilton, which is an amazing card name. Yeah, it is. One of the legendary green creature has, like, you draw a card anytime you enchant a permanent that you control. And one of them was mutate, and mutate is not a keyword yet. And someone asked Mark Rosewater about this mutate keyword, and he says, it's not a thing yet, but it will be. And so people are speculating that Ikoria will have mutate. And Ikoria is supposed to be about building your own creatures and stuff, is what it keeps getting kind of hinted at. So maybe we'll see mutate as a keyword in there, and we'll see how it
it's not augment. And before we move on to the next thing real quick, now that you've mentioned it, did you see the one, I guess, mono black legendary that I would be excited to play with?
Legendary Squirrel.
A Cornelia fashionable filter. Yes. And it's the legendary creature Squirrel. Whenever you cast a spell with a squirrel and its art, you get an acorn. And you get an acorn counter.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever a squirrel you control enters a battlefield or dies, you get an acorn.
Mm-hmm.
2 and a black, pay X and X acorns. Target creature gets minus X till end of turn, or pay a green and X acorns. Target creature gets plus X till end of turn.
Yeah.
That's pretty great.
I didn't expect there was hinting about a squirrel legend, and black was not the color I thought the squirrel legend would be printed, but it does have green in its activation ability.
So it's green black, so, and it can play black. It can play them both and does a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool.
It's really cool.
I'm excited for that. I'm excited to get these new lands. I love that.
Cool.
And we talked about it. Everybody has their own full art lands that they like. I mean, I like the unstable lands.
Yeah. The unstable lands are really nice.
The unstable lands are really cool. I like the original ones that I played with were Battle for Zendikar because they were accessible.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it was the first time they brought them back after, like, Zendikar, aside from the unsets,
right?
Unglued and Unhinged. Mm-hmm. And I those ones I can't afford.
Yeah, those are real expensive.
And now that I got the unstable lands, when I did, I couldn't afford them again today. Gotcha. I mean, they're already up to, like, most of them are $5 each.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some are still at like $3, but I mean, if you still need to get, I mean, you need to get a bunch.
You need a lot of basics.
You do. So, I'm excited for the next, unsanctioned, the box set.
Yeah.
But they do have booster tutors brought back.
Yes.
So with new art, new flavor text,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously we'll get that. Maybe we'll do some recording of that. That would be a fun set to actually record a box set of. So, like, an unboxing and then, like, some play of that. That would be much easier to record than it would be to do.
We should try to teach producer Ryan how to play with
unsanctioned. Oh, that'd be so bad.
That would be crazy. It's just, wait, what does this do? Just, Ryan, just read the card. What does it say?
There's cards in unsets that say things like, put your hand on the table like a creature, and if you ever remove your hand from the table, that creature's gone. And it's like, no, this doesn't work. Or ask somebody who's standing. It's kind of like drinking. It kind of feels like that. It's silly, but I really like it. Or it'll be like, ask someone at a table like next to you to give you a high five. If they do, your creature gets like +2/+2 till end of turn. I mean, that's not exactly it,
right?
But you need other people to care.
Mm-hmm. There's one creature I guess they spoiled the whole set, but there's one creature in there that I really like where you get to explain the interaction that's happening, like when one creature's attacking another's blocking, and ask someone if it's realistic. So this guy is trying to kill my elephant with a stagnant brick wall. Does that make sense to you? If they say no, prevent all the damage. It would be fun, I think.
Before we go down this spiral,
sorry.
We have Commander Knights.
Yes, Commander
from the
Knights.
Wizards Play Network.
Yes, Wizards Play Network announced the scheduling is opening for an event called Commander Knights. Commander Knights is going to be something that your local game store has the option to run from April 27th through June 18th. Players can earn achievements in weekly Commander games with special rules. Their Wizards Play Network is going to provide a list of rules. However, they are local game stores are free to customize these rules, so they can take all of them. They can take none of them. And I guess the real point of this is to create not a Friday Night Magic, but a different night during the week for people to come and play Commander at local game stores and actually have some sort of investment into
like
that.
Tuesday night Commander stuff.
Yeah. It's there's a lot of local game stores where we have the benefit of having two local game stores that
both already run leagues for us.
They're huge. I mean, Commander is at least at one of them, the biggest format that they run.
They get like 50 people.
Yeah.
Yeah. They get a lot.
So, for the local game stores that maybe don't support Commander, this is incentive to do it. And if you complete X amount of these achievements, they are asked that you get a promo pack. And then if you complete all the achievements, that you get an additional promo pack, maybe the foil promo pack versus a regular promo pack.
I'm down.
And it's the rules that Wizards Play Network released is very tuned towards some of the mechanics from Theros. So they're trying to get you to play new cards and play Theros cards. Or just for Andy to play Estrid at local game store so that he can get all of them like right away.
Does Estrid do a lot of what it's asking me to do? I didn't look through.
Control a permanent with three or more auras attached to it.
Oh yeah, I can do that.
Control 10 or more enchantments.
Got it.
Have three or more of your constellation abilities trigger at the same time.
Okay, so if you're looking to go to this, you should build Estrid the Masked with cards from Theros Beyond Death. Seems like we have a theme happening right now for this.
Yeah,
maybe a little bit of enchantments.
Yeah, just a tad bit of enchantments.
Maybe people will play some Theros cards.
They have like have 25 or more devotion to a single color. So
that's a lot.
It's a lot of devotion.
Oh my goodness.
You might have to play like a monocolor deck and have a bunch of creatures and enchantments stick in order to make that happen. But the thing is you don't have to complete all these achievements in one night. You have from... Again, April 27th to June 18th, they're asking to run, you know, one night a week. They're asking not to run it on Fridays so that they can keep doing their normal Friday Night Magic tournaments that a local game store would have. And depending on what night of the week it is, depends on if there's, I think, 7 or 8 nights that you can actually do it. So I think it'll be...
I play Magic another night. I already do it 3 nights a week, so why not 4?
Yeah, I mean, just do it again.
Year of EDH. I'm already up into the 30s for the games now, and we're only on the 29th. So I'm still ahead of the calendar, which is...
Yeah.
I don't want to fall behind, because then I'm going to have to do that night where I'm like, Coyle, are you free to play Magic? We got to play like 18 games today so I can get ahead of...
You know, right now, I'd be down for that, because I'm pretty sure I have like 2 games in on the year right now.
I think I have 34.
I have more decks built this year than I have
than
games
you have decks,
played.
Or than you have games played.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I'm also like...
Well, you're also in robotics season and you're doing a lot of stuff right now outside of Magic.
Yeah, robotics is good too.
But we did have one night where we played with some friends and I think I played 8 games that night. So that night really helped.
Yeah.
Because at most Commander nights, I only get to play 2 or 3 games.
Exactly.
So, but that's still 6 a week. So that alone, most of the time will get me to...
You're
going to
get to your 365 games played in a year.
I want to beat that though. I don't want to beat it by a ton because the next year then I don't want to have to keep beating it.
Right.
It's like 400.
So you want 366?
Yes, for the first year. You know?
Wait, in a leap year, is there 365 or 366? It's a leap year this year, by the way.
Yeah, we get that means I have to do, right? There's an extra day in the year.
So there's 366 days in a leap year? 66. Okay.
So I'm going to start on a leap year on this, and I have to do 366 games of Commander this year. Okay.
One a day. You got it.
I did get asked on Twitter if I was keeping a spreadsheet, and I do have an Excel spreadsheet of the deck that I played, if I won or I lost, and then what I played against. So I haven't added things like color or how many times I've lost to a specific deck yet, but I guess I should, if I want to add them, I should probably add it earlier. Yeah. So I don't have to try to do 366 games worth of finagling in Excel on like my Christmas vacation.
That's fair.
So
in the games that you lost, did you mark who won in the pod?
No, but I'm low enough now that I remember. I think I remember these last 30 games, in all honesty.
Because it might be interesting to see, like, oh, I have bad matchups against Control or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's usually pretty self-explanatory when you see the pod.
That's fair. Like, that's fair.
Oh, this deck's in the pod. It's likely that they won. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you're always, you know, it's hard to be impartial when you see certain commanders that you constantly lose to.
Like Najeela.
Yeah, I mean, things like that are really competitive or that are just really good on their own. Like Locust God, I have a higher win rate than I have a loss rate. So I try not to play that deck as much.
That's fair.
So, do you want to, you know, sometimes I play cards and then I'm like, I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry I played that card.
Yeah.
And that brings us to our next segment. And for that, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and that's why I don't play that card anymore.
That's why I don't play that card anymore. So... There's a card and it's called Narset Enlightened Master. Right.
Oh, yeah.
So very good card in Commander. Very good Commander.
It is very good.
And you can build it fun and not mean, and it actually is a fun deck.
Absolutely.
So she is 3 white, red, and blue. For a 3/2 with first strike and hexproof that says whenever Narset Enlightened Master attacks, exile the top 4 cards of your library until end of turn. You can cast those cards for free. Without paying their mana cost.
That seems really
good. So if they're instants, you can cast them during combat right then. If they're sorceries, you can just cast them later. If they're lands, obviously you can't cast a land, so you can't do that.
Right.
And there's a card in this game that some people may have heard of called Armageddon. It's a sorcery for 3 and a white that says destroy all lands. And it's really good in Narset when you have a really good board presence and you go, well, I'm just going to destroy everyone's lands. Because next turn I can swing and then just keep casting my stuff for free and no one has any lands to interact with me.
Yeah.
And for that reason, strong. I'm sorry.
You know, just building on that, I saw someone make a really compelling argument on Twitter. It was earlier today, actually. They were talking about Armageddon versus a mono green ramp deck. It says, what's the difference between Armageddoning against someone who's playing mono green ramp versus Vandal Blasting someone who's got 2 lands and 20 artifacts out?
What'd they say the difference was?
Well, they were arguing that like Armageddon isn't that mean of a card, like in the right situations. And it's like, it's a very compelling argument. I don't know if I 100% agree with it just because everyone plays lands.
Yeah, I rarely play artifacts. Right. I have like 1 artifact deck, and then I have artifacts that are mostly just ramp.
Right, exactly.
But I might only have 1 or 2, like a Signet or a Thought Vessel or something.
But you'll still recover because
yeah, I'm totally good. If you destroy my artifacts, I'm generally like, oh, I lost 2 mana.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm still playing a land per turn, hopefully, and still getting there eventually. But I just thought it was, you know, thought provoking at least to say like, sure. You know what? Yeah, you're kind of right.
Hard disagree, but we thought about it,
yeah.
And I think Armageddon's mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't play that card anymore.
That's right.
I took that out of that deck. I actually have friends who just said I won't play against that deck anymore. And I said the same thing about Najeela. I say the same thing about some other decks. I won't play against it because I'm going into it with sometimes you feel like a negative attitude because you know that you know what's coming
and you're there to have fun.
And. And so you can play Narset with big things like, what's the Eldrazi Conscription? It's big and it costs a lot of mana and it gives your creature Annihilator 2. I mean, it does the things that you might inherently hate from Eldrazi.
Sure.
But it costs a ton of mana. And if you get it off of that, it doesn't happen till the next turn unless you're taking multiple combats, which if you're taking multiple combats, you're probably playing a more competitive version of
Narset.
So I don't play those cards anymore.
Awesome. One time, I was playing my Eldrazi deck, and I played Emrakul.
This is going to hit really close to home.
I played Emrakul, the Promised End, to take somebody's turn. I decided to take the Lands Matter person's turn, who was playing Lord Windgrace.
Spoiler, this is me.
they had an enchantment called Squandered Resources, which says sacrifice a land, add one mana to your mana pool for any color that that land could produce. And I proceeded to play as many lands as they could, sack them all, and then they didn't have any more lands.
And then pass the turn. You at least left up my two crappy creatures.
I couldn't kill them.
Yeah. But.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I even like minus Lord Windgrace to put lands back out from the graveyard and then sacked those ones too. And Mina and Dend to do some damage and stuff. And it was, I can honestly say that I learned very well how to sabotage somebody's turn using Emrakul. And
that, and I feel like Mindslaver's the same way, right? They're for all intents and purposes, yeah. They feel the same.
Yeah, the only difference is Mindslaver, they don't get their turn afterwards, and Emrakul they do. Right. That's the only difference.
But like sabotaging someone's turn in some cases isn't so bad.
It doesn't have to be horrible. A lot of times it's like tap all your lands, pass. And it's like you didn't get to play land, you missed your turn. Maybe I got rid of one of your creatures or used a removal spell or something, but yeah, normally it's not that bad.
I played, I think, a fairer version because it requires a lot more work. Mm. Doubling Season with Soren Markov.
Yeah.
So that's essentially Mindslaver.
For sure.
For its ultimate.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I did that against a Crick deck.
Okay.
And I didn't feel bad because I was playing against a Crick deck.
Yeah.
But they had already out and they couldn't, they really couldn't deal with it. Was they had out multiple sack outlets.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to sack all their creatures that had Undying from their Machias.
Right.
So I would sack them and it was two Viseer Seer. So I scryed until I left a swamp on top.
Okay.
And yeah. Then I cast their Crick with all their mana and paying as much life as I could.
Yep.
Until the Crick was like out of it was so out of the range that they could ever cast it again.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually felt really bad. After I did it, I said, I don't feel so bad. It's Crick. And then I actually, because that person just sat there for the next three turns doing nothing. True. Until there were four people in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it wasn't even close to being at the end. It's just Doubling Season can kind of enable some really bonkers things.
For sure.
And I had never sabotaged a turn like that before. And so I said, well, I'm going to do it because otherwise I think I'm going to lose this deck.
Yeah.
And I don't think I'd play like that again. And I actually think that I might take that Soren out because that was the only purpose. And I did it once and it didn't feel good.
But that, I mean, you could also make someone's life total 10 with that Soren.
I could.
Which is also kind of mean. But
it is also kind of mean.
But
much more fair than playing something like Armageddon, in my opinion.
That's true.
Less
that's very true.
Salty.
That's very true.
If we had a salt scale and we started just asking people, like I know that EDH directed that salt scale thing. I think that cards like Soren would make it higher up there.
Oh, for sure. Make your life total 10. Like even if you, especially if you're playing like a life gain deck or something, that would be high up on that salt scale.
Yeah.
But as of right now, I don't own any Eldrazi decks.
That's great.
That's why I don't play that card anymore.
I was going to build Kozilek, the Great Distortion.
Mm-hmm.
But that's literally meant for that.
Right.
And I don't think you get them out that quickly because you only play like six creatures in that deck.
Yeah.
And that's more of just like a colorless control deck.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, we saw that on game nights too. And that deck worked really well. It wasn't like oppressive. It was like, I'm going to counter this spell that costs 12 of yours.
Mm-hmm.
How many times is that going to happen in a colorless deck? Probably never again.
Yeah, probably not.
So that
times.
Was fun. So there's a card from War of the Spark, Narset, Parter of Veils.
That does exist.
Very similar to like a Notion Thief in that you're preventing your opponents from drawing cards. Or even Leovold, Emissary of Trust, which is banned as a commander for this exact reason.
Yeah, with banned in commander.
Right. You're right, banned in, because we don't have banned as commander anymore.
Right.
And the Narset itself says, each opponent can't draw more than one card. Notion Thief has, if an opponent would draw a card, instead you draw that, and they only draw their first card.
Mm-hmm.
And then Leovold, Emissary of Trust says, each opponent can't draw more than one card each turn. Well, if you play Narset or Leovold or Notion Thief and then you wheel, so meaning everybody discards their hand and draws a number, whether it's seven or draws a number that, the equal to the amount of the greatest amount that someone was holding, it's really not fun.
Right.
And it feels really bad. And actually, Notion Thief was on both, I think the EDH rec, the salt scale, mm-hmm. it was done. Commander's Quarters talked about, because it's a budget. It's a budget card. It's not expensive at all.
I think it might be $2.
$2 maybe. So it's a pretty budget card. Expensive for like a Commander's Quarters deck.
Sure.
But in the grand scheme of things, pretty affordable. And it just doesn't make anyone happy.
No.
Other than the person who played it.
That is correct.
And for that reason, I don't play any of those cards anymore. I don't run an Ocean Thief, and I don't have a Parter of Veils in any deck that I run.
Any deck that you run wheels in? Or do you not have them in any deck?
No, anymore? I don't put them in any deck.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just because, well, on the off chance that an Ocean Thief, I guess, would matter,
mm-hmm.
I would still feel really bad if someone goes wheel and then I flash it in. Yeah. I'd still feel, because wheels are prevalent in Commander. Windfall is prevalent.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I would say that I see that quite often.
Yeah. I mean, I play that combo in my CEDH deck. Notion Thief Windfall.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, being able to draw 28 cards and everyone else is empty-handed is very mean.
Or sometimes, I was playing, it also wrecks one of the best, in my opinion, one of the best mechanics that are in the game, which is the Monarch. You can't draw your card at end of turn. I mean, it wrecks mechanics.
That's
just
true.
Entirely. Or you're playing Jorian Runediver. We were going to talk about that today. That Notion Thief's really good against that. I mean, you're specifically trying to play your second spell mm-hmm. to draw a single card.
That's why first spell is removal against Notion Thief.
Right. It has to be.
Yeah,
and you have to kill Narset. And thank God we don't have to deal with Leovold anymore.
Right.
But preventing people from drawing cards, which is inherently the strongest thing you could do in Commander, right? Drawing and having card advantage. It's just not fun. So for that reason, I'm sorry. And I don't play that card anymore.
Fair enough. There was one time I had this mono red deck led by this giant pig called Ilharg the Razeboar. And Ilharg is a red god from War of the Spark. And he's a 6/6 trampler that says when Ilharg attacks, you may put a creature card from your hand onto the battlefield tapped and attacking, and return that creature to your hand at the beginning of the next end step. So there's this other creature, right? He's colorless, so you can play him in any deck that you want. But he does cost 12 generic mana. His name is Blightsteel Colossus. It's an 11/11 trample infect, and he's indestructible. The thing is with Ilharg, you can just like put him out and kill someone, and then it does 11 infect. Well, I did this once on turn 2 to somebody. And for that, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Now the deck can only do it on turn 3, but I have to have it in the hand. I powered it down a little bit.
Why turn 3?
Because I took out Mana Crypt.
Oh, so you can't get out Ilharg.
I can't get until out turn 2. Hasty Ilharg. On turn, I can no longer get out a Hasty Ilharg on turn 2.
We appreciate that.
Yeah. And I'm actually changing that deck up anyways to
Purphoros?
To Purphoros, which won't be able to put colorless creatures out with its ability. So hopefully that deck will be less scaly, because it's a little scaly when it's like I swing with Ilharg and people go, am I dead?
Yeah, I know. it's hard to... That's a hard one to play against because it's just surprise.
Yeah.
Gotcha. there's a card that I play that a lot of people know about. I'm not going to do a whole spiel on this one, but I don't play Stasis anymore.
Okay.
I used to. I had it in Estrid for a long time. We talked about this last week, and I know you were concerned. You're like, great, do we have to play around that one card that makes it so I can't untap? Yeah. No, I took Stasis out. I don't play Stax cards.
Okay.
You got Smokestack. You have Stasis. You've got a bunch of... A tangle wire, just things to disrupt your opponents. A lot of these things are very competitive. That's
sure.
fine. And I wanted to try it. And every time that I made a Stax deck, it wasn't actually fun for me or anyone. Like I actually felt bad, so I just hold the card in my hand.
Yeah.
And this one also has an extremely high salt scale. 3.07. It's high. This card, if you don't know what Stasis is, for one and a blue, it's an enchantment that says each player skips their untap step. During your upkeep, pay blue or destroy Stasis. You bury it.
Yep. Bye-bye.
But in Estrid, you untap all of your enchanted permanents. So you are putting masks on all of your lands, And then as long as you have Estrid out, stasis does nothing to you because you get to untap all of your lands and that's you just keep one island up. And it's just, it's not fun. Right. So for that reason, I don't play that card anymore.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yep. I'm here to have fun.
So I had this deck back in the day. It was one of my first Grixis decks that I decided to power up all the way, called Nekusar. Nekusar is for 2 and Grixis, blue, black, red. Whenever a opponent would draw a card, they take a damage. And at the beginning of each player's draw step, they draw an additional card. And when I played this deck, usually Nekusar would stick, I would wheel, and that would pretty much be game over. Nekusar had to stick for one game. So what I did when they released Anya, Falconwrath, I said, I can play a wheels deck now without blue, and hopefully it'll be weaker and more fun to play. And then I won on turn 3. That deck's better. And I'm sorry that I built it. I literally played it for one day and went, oh, this is better than Nekusar. Probably not as much consistency because you don't get to run counter spells and stuff. But also they printed this card called Underworld Breach that is just absolutely ridiculous in Anya.
Yeah, I didn't think about that card being good in there. That's a good card to upgrade for the pre-comp, but maybe not make your Anya deck broken.
Don't make Anya deck broken. People don't want to play.
Also, if you're going to make your broken deck broken, test it with friends. Make them feel that.
Yeah.
Not people at the shop like you did with the Anya, and you said, I didn't realize this was happening.
Right.
Like, I didn't realize what I built.
I didn't realize it was going to be that consistent.
You know, you look for some things online, you add your own flavor, and then you go, oops. Like, and it's hard to just not do it because you do want to win. You were playing for money that day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you said, well, I do want to try to win, but you put it away. You didn't even play the second game, I remember.
Nope.
You said, I can't do this.
Yeah, I think we went to the winner's pod after that, and they're like, okay, so winner's pod. So it's like, and I literally asked, do I have to play the same deck that I just played? It says, well, you can't play something stronger. I'm like, no.
I'm going to play something way weaker. Way weaker.
Yeah.
Because this is not fun for anyone.
Nope. I know I did that with you with my Gitrog deck.
Just to test it out.
It was like, can I test this out? I'm just going to try to like go off on turn 4. Like just that's what the deck's going to do.
Right. And it did. I don't know if it was turn 4, but you did it.
Yeah, it was.
It was either turn 4 or 5.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So tell us about all the awful things you've done or all the things you've done by accident. Coil once accidentally assembled an infinite turn combo, but that he would obviously play again. I mean, that was cool. It was like 4 cards and you said, I can't believe this happened.
Yeah.
But tell us about the cards you won't play.
Yeah.
Tweet at us with hashtag. And for that, I'm sorry.
Yes, please do.
We have another pack to open today. Okay, so here's what I want.
Okay.
I picked the Ravnica Allegiance one for selfish reasons.
Okay, what do you want from
what
this
I
pack?
Want in this is a foil Hydroid Krasis.
Ooh.
And for someone to enjoy a Hydroid Krasis, right? So I need one for the cube, but regardless, we're gonna give these away.
Right.
And I want someone to enjoy. That's what I want to open. It's like the value card of the set.
Hashtag value.
Value. Or someone can enjoy Smothering Tide.
Smothering Tide would be great.
Smothering Tide is really good for Commander. That's what we want.
Hey, what set is Guardian Project printed in?
Ravnica Allegiance.
Oh.
It seems like a pretty good pack, like all around for this podcast.
Yeah, I think so.
You ready to open this?
I'm excited.
Pick one. Should I open it right here?
ASMR some pack opening. Oh my god.
I'm done with this. I don't enjoy this at all.
I made it weird.
Yes, you did. Okay. We have a Spear Spewer. 1 red for a 0/2 defender that taps to deal 1 damage to each player. I play this in Rakdos.
I like it a lot in Rakdos.
It works in Rakdos. Rakdos, Lord of Riots. You need to deal damage before you can cast Rakdos.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool. Concordia Pegasus, 1 and a white for a 1/3 flyer.
Generic. Flyers.
We like flyers.
Yeah, flyers are good.
Blue white in draft. It's pretty great.
Yeah.
Limited. Yeah. I like flyers.
Flyers are good.
It's like you have an inherent advantage.
Unless they print reach things that make you gain life.
That's, yeah, like the 1/4 in this set. Quench. It's a counter spell that unless you pay 2, it counters a spell.
Simic Flash.
For 1 and a blue.
I like that card a lot.
Rubble Slinger, 2/3 reach for 2 and hybrid Gruul.
Mm, okay.
Split red or green.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Open the gates for a green sorcery, search your library for a basic land or gate. Reveal it, put it in your hand.
Okay. Get some ramp.
I like those gates.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Thirsting Shade, 1 black. You have a 1/1 shade. Shade.
Yeah, that's where creature we type. Fight. We fight in the shade.
Fight in the shade?
Yeah.
Throwing Shade?
We could throw it. Don't throw it.
I don't want to. This is Thirsting Shade.
Oh.
It's, Lifelink it's or pay 2 and a black to give it +1/+1 till end of turn.
Okay.
Cerulean Caretaker for a single green, a 0/3 defender that taps to add, tap an untapped creature you control to add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool.
Okay.
You have to tap 2 creatures. It's a little, yeah. You really got to kind of invest there.
There's an investment, for sure.
I'm not going to pick one, pack one that.
Probably not.
Law Mage's Binding. This is pretty good. It's like, it's close to a pacifism, right? So 1, a white and a blue for flash enchant creature can't attack or block, and its activated abilities can't be activated. This is really good in draft.
Yeah, that is good.
These are really
which
good.
Which is what we're talking about. Draft.
In draft environments. Goblin Gathering. This is a good pick one, pack one.
I don't even know what that is.
So you create a number of 1/1 red goblin creature tokens equal to 2 plus the number of goblin gatherings in your graveyard. So you get 2, and then it can be 3, then 4, then 5 as the last one.
Okay.
Or 6 if you end up drafting more than 4.
Yeah. You can do the whole deck if you're really lucky.
If you're really lucky, yeah. It's like drafting 7 dwarves, right? In Throne of Eldraine. I've only ever seen 2 7 dwarves.
Yeah, you're only going to get 2.
So you can have a 3 threes, but you're not going to have 7 7 dwarves.
Unless you also get a Mirror March or something. Is Mirror March printed in this set too?
Mirror March is also Ravnica Allegiance.
Nice.
Mirror March seems really fun too for a commander.
Yeah.
Blade Juggler. 4 and a black for a 3/2, or it has Spectacle. If an opponent lasts life this turn, you can cast it for its cheaper Spectacle cost.
Mm-hmm.
When it enters the battlefield, it deals 1 damage to you and you draw a card. Card advantage.
Card advantage is good advantage.
First uncommon, Consecrate and Consume. Split card here for 1 and a hybrid, Orzhov, black or red.
Mm-hmm.
Exile target card black. From a graveyard.
Black or red?
I'm sorry, black or white.
Okay.
Black or white, Orzhov.
Mm-hmm.
Exile target card from a graveyard, draw a card.
Okay.
Or consume for sorcery for 2, a white and a black. Target player sacks a creature with the greatest power among them that they control, and you gain life equal to his power.
That's good.
I don't dislike this card.
Yeah.
It's good.
That's good.
Angelic Exaltation. This card is actually really good, I think, in some commander decks. This came in the Alila pre-con.
Okay.
It's an enchantment that whenever a creature you control attacks alone, it really gets like exalted. It gets +X/+X till end of turn, where X is the number of creatures you control.
Oh, okay.
Last uncommon, Rumbling Ruin.
Rumbling Ruin.
This is a lot of text, okay? So it's a 6/6 for 6, 5 and a red.
Sure.
When it enters the battlefield, count the number of +1/+1 counters on creatures you control. Creatures your opponents control with power less than or equal to that number can't block this turn.
Oh.
It's fun.
It's +1/+1 counters matters.
+1/+1 counters matter.
Uh-huh.
And it's our rare.
Ooh.
Simic. Biomancer's Familiar. I think this is a fun card.
I like that card.
I would pick this card. And then I'd hope to get Simic cards.
Sure.
Activated abilities. It's a 2/2 for a mutant that costs green and a blue.
Mm-hmm.
It says activated abilities of creatures you control cost two less to activate.
Yep.
This effect cannot reduce the amount of mana and ability costs to activate that to less than 1.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then tap it the next time a target creature you control adapts this turn. It adapts as though it had no counters on it. So adapt is a Simic mechanic that you adapt, you put a +1/+1 counter on it, and then it generally does something.
It's a number of +1/+1 counters, depending on what the ability is.
Sure.
Yeah.
And this allows you to keep adapting.
Yeah.
Which is what the Simic are doing.
Yeah. I do like that card. It's Training Grounds on a creature, which is
And we got cool. The Simic Guildgate to go with it.
Ooh.
And a Goblin token.
Too bad we can't take both of those. I honestly think...
The Guildgate's going to come back around. That's going to wheel.
We'll see. I honestly like the Orzhov removal card the best.
So you would pick one, pack one, Consecrate, and Consume?
Yeah, hoping to get the black flying shade with lifelink on the way back around.
You're looking for that Thirsting Shade?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'm thirsty.
I'm gonna go with this Biomancer's Familiar.
Yeah, I think it's fair.
And then I'm gonna hope to get that Simic Guildgate on the way back around, or I might go with the open the gates.
Mm-hmm.
fixing my lands, but depending on what I see in the next few packs,
you could grab that Quench too.
The Quench is really good as well.
Is Quench good in limited? I know it's good in
paying
standard.
Two. Yeah, I mean, if you've got the mana open, it only costs one and a blue. And right. if they need six mana, that's their entire turn. You quench and go, oops, if you don't have two colorless more, you can't play that card.
That's true.
I think that card gets people even in constructed formats.
Oh, for sure it does.
It gets people.
I play it in Simic Flash. It's a really good conch yeah. spell. So.
Well, this is a good pack. Thank you, Cube Draft.
Yeah.
Cube Draft, everybody. You can Woo. Find them on Twitter. Cube Draft. We will put these in the pile for the giveaway that we do in a few episodes.
In a few episodes.
And we have a one more thing this week.
Yes.
It is Commander of the Week, Jorianne Runediver.
Jorianne. Oh, I like her so much. So I used to have... I have this deck. I used to have this deck, too.
I had a deck. I used to have the deck. I still have the deck.
So this deck that I had before, the original title of the deck was, is it Groupug?
It was not.
It was slowly developed into not Groupug. There were a lot of Groupug cards in the deck. It was all about drawing cards, letting everyone draw cards, and then eventually trying to win with a Labman mechanic where if I were to draw a card and I have no cards left in my library, I win the game instead of lose the game. Let me just tell you.
You've done that like three times.
I do it.
It's really consistent. It's pretty great.
Sometimes it takes a while. It only runs one tutor. It runs Gamble. That's the one tutor that it runs. It probably would be more consistent if you could actually run, if you run like Mystical Tutor or something. But the combo in it, in order to do it, is actually Fraying Sanity and Traumatize. And what Fraying Sanity says is an enchantment, an aura curse for two and a blue, enchant player. At the beginning of each end step, enchanted player puts the top X cards of his or her library into his or her graveyard, where X is the number of cards put into that graveyard from anywhere this turn. And you might think, oh yeah, this is mill strategy. You can get it on someone else. I like to put it on myself. And then I cast the card Traumatize. For three, a blue, and a blue, it's a sorcery. It says target player puts the top half of his or her library, rounded down, into his or her graveyard. So I take half my library, put it in my graveyard, and then at my end step, I take the other half of my library and put it into my graveyard. And then all you need is an instant speed draw mechanic, and you can win with your alternate win con. Now, that was in the original deck. That did get ported over to the new deck, but instead of having Groupug cards, now all I have is all these cantrips.
Mm-hmm.
So
makes sense.
Faithless Looting, Ponder, Intuition is in here.
Brainstorm. Intuition?
Isn't. Yeah.
Intuition. Four cents. Six
or no,
cents,
I'm sorry. Not Intuition.
$65.
I meant Anticipate. I'm oh, sorry. Okay. And Impulse. I'm running.
Those cards are not on the same scale, but it would fit still.
Yeah. And I finally got a copy of Isochron Scepter.
Nice.
And I don't run Dramatic Reversal in the deck. So Isochron Scepter is there to, you know, stick a cantrip under so that you can keep doing it, or Narset's Reversal under it, because, you know, that's actually really,
that's really,
really
strong.
So I added a few more win conditions to the deck. I added a Locust God. So for, you might remember Locust God. But for four, a blue and a red, it's a flying 4/4 that says whenever you draw a card, create a 1/1 blue and red insect creature token with flying and haste. I forgot to explain the commander, Jorianne Runediver, for one, a blue and a red. It's a Merfolk Wizard 2/3 that says whenever you cast your second spell each turn, draw a card. So really it's just for extra card draw. You could run pretty much any Is It commander for this deck.
Good thing I explained that card earlier, because we already talked about
it.
Yeah,
that's true. That's probably why I skipped over it.
Yeah, no, it makes total sense.
Thassa's Oracle is a new card from Theros Beyond Death that I added to this deck. It is also an alternate win condition. Enter the battlefield. You look at the top X cards of your library, where X is your devotion to blue. Then you may put one of those cards into your hand and the rest of it above your library. However, if your devotion to blue is greater than the number of cards you have left in your library, you win the game. So that's the third alternate win con besides Laboratory Maniac and Jace, Wielder of Mysteries, who is the Planeswalker version of Laboratory Maniac. And then one card that I did want to highlight that's should, I think, go in every Jorianne deck. I can't think why you wouldn't. Would be God Eternal Kefnet.
printed in War of the Spark. So for 2, a blue and a blue, you get a 4/5 zombie god flying creature that says, you may reveal the first card you draw each turn as you draw it. Whenever you reveal an instant or sorcery card this way, copy that card and you may cast the copy. The copy costs 2 less to cast. So since Jorien wants to cast 2 spells per turn, if you flip an instant or sorcery, which this particular deck list runs 34 instants and sorceries, you can cast the copy, because you do cast the copy according to God Eternal Kefnet, and then you can cast the actual card too. Those are 2 casts off of 1 card.
Yeah.
So Isochron Scepter also has you cast the copy. Isochron Scepter has an imprint when it enters the battlefield, and you can pay 2 generic and tap it and create a copy and then cast that copy for free. The instant or sorcery that you imprint with Isochron Scepter has to be converted mana cost 2 or less. There's some control elements here. We run Cryptic Command, Narset's Reversal. One of the new cards that I got to put in this deck is the Magic Mirror.
Oh.
6 blue, blue, blue legendary artifact. The spell costs 1 less to cast for each instant and sorcery card in your graveyard. Hopefully we have a bunch in the graveyard. It says you have no maximum hand size. At the beginning of your upkeep, put a knowledge counter on the Magic Mirror, then draw a card for each knowledge counter on the Magic Mirror. We don't run any proliferate in here, so really we're only getting counters the slow way, but hopefully we'll be able to do that. I finally put Mystic Sanctuary into the deck. That is a land, an island that says when it enters the battlefield, it enters tapped unless you control 3 or more islands. When it enters the battlefield untapped, you may put target instant or sorcery card from your graveyard on top of your library. We run some control. We run Rapid Hybridization, 1 blue instant that says destroy target creature. It can't be regenerated. That creature's controller puts a 3/3 green frog lizard creature token on the battlefield.
Frog lizard.
We run 2 of the Niv-Mizzets in here that when you draw a card, they deal a damage to try to close out some games. We run Consecrated Sphinx because when other people draw cards, I want to draw cards.
Also just great.
It's super good. And that card actually was amazing in the old version of this deck when it was Group Hug, because everyone was drawing additional cards every turn. So I was drawing a ton of cards. And for the flavor, for my favorite card in the deck that I hope this deck is very untested. So I'm hoping to jam some games with it and tune it. But this card in particular is one I hope to cast called Mind's Desire. It's a 4 blue blue sorcery that says shuffle your library, then exile the top card of your library. Until end of turn, you may play that card without paying its mana cost. And it has Storm. So I'm hoping to cast like 10 spells and then cast Mind's Desire and basically get 10 Urza triggers. That's what Urza Artificer something or other. I forget his title.
Very similar to Golos.
Well, Golos, you get to exile the top and cast them for free. Like, you get to look at the top 3.
Mm-hmm. This is only one at a time, but...
And this is one at a time, and you have to shuffle in between, so you can't, like, stack the top of your deck or anything like that.
Okay, makes sense.
But it seems like it's going to be a really fun deck. I mean, almost every card in here has you draw cards.
If you play Jorien, tweet at us and tell us what you play in it, and we'll have the deck list posted tomorrow when we share the episode on Twitter.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that's it this week.
That's all I've got.
That's it. So as always, we want to thank you for listening. If you want to contact us, you can head to guardianprojectpodcast.com. On Twitter, you can find me at @ATFlory.
You can find me at @MPCoilMTG.
Also, take a look for #GuardianProjectPod to find our posts and episodes. We'd like to hear from you, so send along your comments and any topics you'd like us to talk about, and we'll go over those next week. And then we're also going to start streaming weekly.
Woo!
We're going to be streaming after we record. So
yes.
Tonight we'll be doing that.
Absolutely.
We'll be posting links so you can come find us. We're going to try to get a schedule together. The goal is we would stream together once and then maybe each separately once so we can hang out and interact with everyone maybe 2-3 times a week.
Yep.
And we'll obviously have links about that. The other thing that we want to ask everyone to do is if you like our podcast to like and subscribe, wherever you're listening to our podcast. And then if you have the ability to leave a comment or a review, please do that. We're looking to grow this channel, and we appreciate all the support you can provide. And that will obviously, we'll get a lot from that, from getting some reviews.
Yeah, and the support will help us too. Any suggestions that you might have and help us improve.
Wonderful.
Awesome.
Well, we will see everyone next week, and we will chat with you if you come hang out with us while we're streaming.
Yeah, maybe you'll get little tidbits if you come join us on the stream, right after we record.
And we have lots of giveaways for the stream. We got lots of like promo codes and stuff from pre-releases and for free packs and stuff on Arena. So come hang out, and we will talk to you all next week.
Bye bye.
See ya.
That's when the music starts slapping.
The music starts slapping.
Slap.
We do have good music.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jazar.
Thanks, Jazar.
Jafar?
Not Jafar. Jazar. One of my coworkers thinks that.
I'm going to reach out to him and just be like, hey, man.
Yeah, do it.
Your music slaps. By the way, and it slaps.